Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this January 3rd, 2012. We thought we would do an open line early in January so we get great ideas, things that we have just not thought of, or you want to press us on doing more on a certain issue that we have covered fairly regularly. We've tried to do these once a month. We didn't do one in December, so why not January? Why not January 3rd? And why not right now? We have phone lines open for you. I'm particularly interested in a nonfiction history book. We like to do history at least once a month. So if anybody read something over the holidays or you're reading something that is current, please give us that suggestion. And whatever you'd like to talk about. It's going to be a big political year, of course. We'll do a lot of political shows. Maybe there's an analyst that we have not had on the air or you'd like to have on again that we had on 4 years ago during the presidential election. Can you believe it was 4 years ago? I can't believe that. 4 years ago already. It seems like it was maybe a year and a half. We were in Dubuque. Be fun to be there again now. But we're not. We're here, and that's okay. So here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. And we have a couple lines open right now. So if you know what you want to suggest, please give us a ring at this very moment, 800-486-8655. You can always use an email address, too, which Rhonda will give to me because I always forget what the email address should be. I always give you all of our emails, and there's a simpler way to do that. So we'll give you that address as we carry on here this hour. 800-486-8655. Brilliant suggestions, creative suggestions for the brand new year is what we're entertaining this hour. And we start with Don in Portage. Hi, Don.
Hey, good morning. I'd like to start suggesting that we get the new year underway with Frank from Madison Unleashed on. Just turn him loose and see where he goes.
I don't know very much about Frank, other than he's a brilliant questioner. He's always wonderful to hear. So we'll have to nail him down. You want to hear him for a full hour?
Well, I'll leave that call up to you, but okay. I'd like to hear from him.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Don. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Yeah, bye. We every now and then get a suggestion that we should have regular callers. You can call once a week to the program, but we have heard from some of these people for many years now, and it would be kind of fun to gather all of them and then go out for a cup of coffee after the show. I like that idea. Sally in Madison. Hello, Sally.
Hi. My suggestion is to somehow get somebody like Bill McKibben to talk about how to explain or more publicize to the general public what the economic impacts of climate change will be, because my impression is sometimes that many people think of climate change as just an environmental issue, when in fact it's going to be have a huge economic impact on our country, not to mention the rest of the world. And I think if people understood that, they might think about it differently and vote differently on issues.
He's a marvelous guest, and it's a very good suggestion. So we're on it. We're on the case.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Sally. Thanks for the call. Joe in Wauwatosa. Hi, Joe.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Follow up on climate change, maybe Andy Revkin from New York Times to talk about the actual science of it. There's a lot that the general public doesn't understand. They come up with bogus arguments about, you know, correlation is not causation and things like that. So we need to really explain what the but the science behind it is, the greenhouse gases and the basic physics of the atmosphere and so forth. I think he'd be a great speaker. There's many others as well you could find on that issue. Second topic would be to get every one of the Wisconsin congressional representatives up there as often as possible so that we can really quiz these people on what they're doing, and so they can try to defend why they should be still in office or be reelected. I think it's very, very important. I'd like to talk with Paul Ryan and Sensenbrenner and a number of other people about why are they doing what they're doing and so forth. So those are two suggestions that I'd like to have. There's lots more, but I'm sure you get other ideas as well.
All right, Joe, good suggestions.
Thanks.
Thank you. David in Grandview. Hi, David.
Hi. I wanted to bring up the book called Caught in the Middle. It's about globalization and rural America, especially in the Midwest. regional development, economic development, and global cities, knowledge centers, and things like that. An incredible book, fascinating read. I forget the author's name. I think it's Middleton.
Okay, I haven't read it, but I've heard about it. So that sounds good, too.
Yeah, thank you. Fantastic
All right.
book. Good luck.
Thanks, David. Thanks for the call. Joanne in Germantown, hi.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
And you, too.
That was such a fun show to listen to. Say, I saw that Archbishop Dolan has a new book out, and I don't recall the title. I have not read it yet, but he sure would be a delightful interview, and I bet he would love to talk to somebody from the Milwaukee area again.
Okay. I didn't know he had a new book.
Yeah, it's his, I don't, the, I think Peace for this World or something to that nature, and it's by Archbishop, and it's listed as Archbishop E, or Dolan E, and then that's the author it's under.
Okay. Good suggestion. Thanks, Joanne.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Les in Toma. Hi, Les.
Morning.
Hi.
Yeah, I would like to have a show on these think tanks that y'all would hear about. You know, how are they organized? Where do they get their money? You know, how do they work? Because we always get opinions from think tanks, and I think that forms a lot of people's opinion on things, but I really don't know a whole lot about what their motivation is and who runs them and where they get their money.
Okay. So somebody who can explain how many there are, what their political persuasion is, money they... Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, Les.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Bill in Madison. Hi, Bill.
Yes. Everyone makes a lot of hay about, for example, Mitt Romney's background in business, and they get all warm and fuzzy because they say he's a successful businessman who's... But the people I've talked to who are either Republican or Democrat, once they find out what his business actually was and how he made his money, they're not so sanguine. I would like to have somebody on the air, an economist. I mean, there are several that you know, I'm sure, who could be engaging. I have one suggestion, but who could explain exactly what a leveraged buyout person, how leveraged buyout firms make their money. Explain exactly how people like Mitt Romney make his money. People who can explain what hedge funds are and how hedge fund managers make their money. In other words, basically predatory economics 101. Because there's a lot of these people who throw around their business credentials, and yet no one really knows, has a good understanding of exactly what some of the sleazy ways they make their money. And there's a lot of terms thrown around like hedge fund managers and leverage buyout kings, you know, and people don't know what they are. They don't know what they do. And I think that this election cycle, it really makes a difference because there are people running for office who, you know, these questions are really relevant as to whether you should vote for them or not.
All right, Bill. Thank you. Thanks for the call. That might be interesting. We should focus perhaps as maybe we'll wait till New Hampshire is done next week, but to focus on who appear to be the front runners, which we should know by New Hampshire, don't you think, and really do long, hour-long programs on, what do you think, the top three? Might be good for us to do so we know more. We go next to Cynthia in Menominee. Hi, Cynthia.
I'm calling for two reasons. One, to recommend a book I had listened to on audio CD, The Language of Flowers. And it deals with the issue of children aging out of the foster system and what happens or what could possibly happen. I also serve on a board for Risk Children Positive Alternatives, and we have been alerted to the need for housing and some sort of help for people who age out of the foster system at 18.
Okay. Is that a new book, do you know, Cynthia?
It is. It's on the top 10 national. It's a very new book.
All right. Yeah, that sounds great.
It would be a great one for chapter day two.
Okay.
But the topic, the continuing need for somebody to nurture the young adults that age out of the foster system.
It's a very good suggestion.
Thank you.
Thanks, Cynthia.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Bud in Waukesha. Hi.
Hi. There's a book I've been waiting to hear discussed on air, and I know it's it was a tough read for me. I think it would be tough for you and the listeners, but I think it would be well worthwhile, particularly in this political season. Chris Hedges, The Death of Liberalism. He doesn't give much quarter, but he's a serious thinker. He's watched what's been happening. He writes beautifully. I know he's been on air before with other volumes. Chris Hedges, The Death of Liberalism. It's not a pretty thing to think about, but and he doesn't cut many people much slack. But I think we're going to be looking for real liberalism again at some point, and to know how it went wrong is worthwhile. And it's not a conservative's greed. It's really a self-critical approach.
I remember the book he wrote. I can't remember the title on
War. Of course, that gives our lives meaning, I think, was the earlier one. He's been a war correspondent in several active war theaters.
Right.
He's Harvard Divinity School educated. He's a serious guy.
Yes.
And the book is well worth everybody thinking about.
Excellent suggestion. We're on it.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, bud. Bye. Andy in Lake Geneva. Hi, Andy.
Hi. Good morning. Happy New Year.
You too.
I was absolutely shocked this weekend to receive from a friend of mine the former list of top employers in the state of Wisconsin. You know, the brand names you used to know about, Alice, Chalmers, Davidson, Harley, and Hounderspeger, the whole ball of wax, Case of the past, and then the current top employers in the state of Wisconsin. And this is something people should understand. The top employer in the state of Wisconsin is Walmart. After that, it's a long series of governmental agencies bottomed out by the University of Wisconsin. It was absolutely shocking. And I think I have a second home in Wisconsin, so I'm really not a Wisconsinite, but I love the state. I think if the residents of this state really look at this, it's an eye-opener to really having to see what the core problems are that are besetting this really beautiful state.
Where do you can you send us the list, Andy?
I'll be more than happy to.
Thank you. I'll give you my email. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. It's dunk@wpr.org. Thanks, Andy. Pretty easy to remember. dunk@wpr.org. And Rhonda, if you're listening, let me know which email address people should. Oh, she's writing it down. Oh, she wrote it down. Hold on. Let me. Here we go. You can also go to talk@wpr.org or go to the Kathleen Dunn Show WPR page and check on listener suggestions. And there's you can fill out your suggestion there where it says program comments and suggestions. That's the WPR.org Kathleen Dunn Show. There's a form there, or talk@wpr.org. But you can also send that, Andy, to me directly so we can look at that list. Might be a good show. We're having an open line for this very early day in January 2012. Brand new year seemed like an appropriate time to find out what's on your minds, what you'd like to hear on the air as we begin a whole new year. Doesn't it seem daunting in some ways? A whole new year is before us. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. One line is open. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's an open line for this hour. And hour number two, the cover story on National Geographic, Twins Alike But Not Alike. You would be amazed to see some of these pictures of twins. Some of them you just simply cannot tell these people apart. It's more than on twins. In the article, the senior editor also writes about, the fact that people have been studying identical and fraternal twins and then comparing the results, which can help us learn more about inheritance and the influence of the environment. But now there's a third factor that's coming into play, epigenetics, and we'll talk about what that is and how it may benefit all of us. That's hour two. Willem in Colfax, hi.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering if maybe Russ Feingold would be a good guest because of his work on campaign finance reform and how the new Citizens United law is going to affect this campaign cycle, and I think he'd be an excellent speaker about that.
Oh, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. We'll try. We try periodically to get him on the air, so we will make a call soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Willem.
Bye.
Joe in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. I was
My suggestion was that Naomi Klein. She wrote a book a while back called Shock Doctrine. And while it's not a current publication, the ideas expressed in there are going to be current. And I think revisiting that and getting an understanding of these austerity measures would be helpful.
It sure would. Okay, Joe.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call. We go to Margie in Franklin. Hi, Margie.
Hi, Kathleen. I wanted to let you know that recently, sometime in the middle of December, I believe, the CMS, Medicare, has deemed obesity recognized as a disease, and they are now going to be covering obesity or weight control measures.
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't been done before. However, my concern with that is that there's the coverage that they're going to be providing is only through weight control methods through the primary doctor's office. And it's significant coverage. I believe it starts out as once or twice a week for a month and then twice a month for 3 months. And it's an extensive plan. But as most people are aware, primary care doctors do not have a lot of time to spend with individual patients on an ongoing basis. And there's real concern how that's going to turn into successful weight management to help resolve some of the obesity issues. The American Dietetic Association, which is now the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, is launching a petition through the White House website to get the White House to take a look at this ruling and how it impacts how weight control education is going to be delivered. And we really feel like dietitians need to be on the forefront of this, nutritionists that are experienced with it, psychologists that have a track record of working with successful weight control, as well as programs like Weight Watchers that are well proven. There's no studies that is showing the primary care doctor as being an efficient way of helping people with successful weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is dramatic that they've acknowledged it, but I think that it's in the wrong place. And I imagine that their thinking possibly was that it needs to stay under the umbrella of the medical home model in terms of who's primarily involved. But I think it would serve the client best if someone that was experienced in nutrition, food science, the food market out there, and behavior modification and all those was at the forefront, but certainly provided communication with the medical primary care person in terms of progress.
Yeah, I see your point, and it's a good suggestion. We are going to do a show on Medicare, and we'll bring this up on Thursday, and I know Rhonda is working on a show on weight management as well, so you've struck gold here because you'll have two related shows in a couple weeks on this.
Well, and thank you very much.
We'll be sure to bring up the topic. Isn't it remarkable how many ads there are now on, political ads certainly, but how many ads there are on losing weight? There must be millions of people who make that as a New Year's resolution.
There is, and there's so much money that people put into it,
yes.
Especially into the magic cures. That,
right.
It's sad to see how people waste their money.
Right. Books and programs and, All right, Margie, well, we're on the stories.
Thank you so
much.
Okay,
thank you. Thanks for your call. Jerry in Menasha. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, please have Dennis Kucinich, who believes in waging peace, on your show. We are so war-oriented in this country, and he's one of the few voices who has the courage to stand up and say, let's wage peace.
All right, we haven't had him on in a long time. He's been with us before, but we'll give him a call.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Jennifer in Madison, hi.
Hi. Kathleen, I would love to have a program that explores leadership, what true leadership is. I worry going into this next election season that, as usual, we're looking at what do the candidates say they believe? What are their opinions? And we want to go with the people we agree with. And I think a lot of folks, especially in Wisconsin, discovered that it's not about who you agree with. You have to look at what are the methods, what are the approaches, how well does a leader listen to people who don't agree, what is the fallout from what happens. I mean, I know people, a lot of people who said, well, yeah, those public employees should pay more for their health care. But then when they found out that the lowest income public employees had lost 15% of their income, they said, I never wanted that to happen. So how do we get people to think about the true qualities of a leader and not just their opinions?
You have a guest in mind?
Well, there are several leadership programs in this state that I could recommend.
All right.
Leadership Wisconsin, which is affiliated with the University Extension. For the purpose of disclosure, I'd have to say I'm an alumna of the program and currently a volunteer there. But that is a lot of what they teach. It's about the ethics of what you want to achieve, how you go about achieving it, how you listen to others and find common ground instead of just stampeding your way in.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could use a bit of that.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. I know some people who've been through the program, too, so we should probably take a look at it.
Yeah, and many of the faculty in that program are just excellent speakers. They're from all around the state.
All right.
So I could get Rhonda a list of specific people if you're interested.
Please do.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Charles from Ingleside, Illinois. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, Kathleen. Very quickly, I'd like to explain how we may cut down our property taxes. And when the king wanted trade with the colonies, he sent John Winthrop over as governor of Boston. And then they gave him the right to set up all these little farms that were going to trade with the Indians. But anyway, he gave the colonists deeds to their property. But then they, as a group, are a corporation that has to run the town. And they started having meetings then and voting for whatever they wanted or didn't want. And that has continued now for 380 years and running perfectly. They don't meet every day now. They meet only once a year. But right now in January, they're getting a warrant to come into the meeting in April. And also the warrant gives the budget, the committees that can be set up so they can understand what's going to happen next year. And then the warrant also gives a proposal from each department, each city department, what their budget will be. And you can vote yes, or you can vote no, or you can raise it, or just don't give them any money and it won't be any department next year. But anyway, the people run their town absolutely. At first, there were counties for infrastructure, roads, and bridges. But as those were all developed, they withered away, and you only have state office in districts. But the state puts a 2% cap on what the towns can raise the budget. So education is the first thing on the budget, and they raise it about 10% sometimes.
So do you have a guest suggestion with all of this, Charles? Is there somebody who...
Yeah, call Concord and get them to send anybody. Or the old moderator of the annual meeting.
Okay.
Very good, Arthur Thompson, I think is his name.
Arthur.
But they won't send anyone over to talk.
Okay. All right, Charles. Thank you.
And listen, the idea is to get props. See, down in Illinois, we have the same thing you have in Wisconsin. We have our townships, but then my township has three or four villages in it.
Uh-huh.
And we have the county, and the county has got, when the budget went over $5 billion, they split the park district off so it wouldn't count as county. Wouldn't count as a county budget anymore.
Right.
They're about $7 million a year.
All right, Charles, thank you very much. I don't want to cut you short, but we have a lot of people to get to. We have the idea in mind, and we'll investigate. Thank you very much for the call. Hugh in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. Earlier this morning, I had a guest who said you should hear both sides of the story. So I'll have some ideas to give, more conservative views. I mentioned two of them before. One, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the British Empire by H.W. Crocker. And he'll talk about things that, in fact, on the cover it says, Three Cheers for Colonialism, and I'm sure that'll go over well with many of your listeners. Dinesh D'Souza said after reading it, he grew up in India, and what did the empire do? He said, well, apart from roads, railways, ports, schools, parliamentary system of government, rights, separation of powers, checks and balances, the rule of law and the English language, nothing. But actually, they did more than that. They ended, the diversity, the multicultural nonsense that you love so much. They ended things like burning the widow of the deceased man. The British stopped that. It's a broad outlook on the whole of the British Empire, which is a lot of world history. The other thing... Injustice, the whistleblower in the Department of Justice, J. Christian Adams, on the corruption within that department, the refusal to enforce the Voting Rights Act of 1965, when blacks are denying the right of a vote to whites, when they're using fraud to win elections in counties in Mississippi and Alabama. There is a refusal to use a colorblind approach under the Obama Holder administration. Another one.
Who was the guest on that, Hugh? I missed the guest suggestion.
What's that?
On the voting, who was the guest suggestion?
J. Christian Adams. He resigned his post in the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department.
Okay.
Because, he feels that they are not interested in enforcing the law when victims of fraud are white people.
Okay. All right. I got you.
And the last one would be Michelle Malkin, something about corruption. She's always exposing the crony capitalism of the Obama administration, the corruption that goes on. So three of those should make your listeners very unhappy, but you'd get a lot of calls.
And you would be happy. Would you
yes,
be happy, Hugh? Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Hugh. Our number is 800-486-8655. It's an open line for January here on the Ideas Network, the shows that you'd like to hear from 9 to 11. I have yet, unless I've missed it, heard the suggestion for historical... book, not fiction, nonfiction historical book, current, that's really good. So we can sink our minds into that. Jerry from Argyle. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. Let me go off speaker.
All right, Jerry.
Good morning.
Hi, Jerry.
The guest suggestion I have is a lady named Esther Henry.
Esther Henry, okay.
Yeah, she lives in Monroe, Wisconsin, and she wrote a book called Nolly, which is it's a novel based on her experiences as a missionary in Papua New Guinea.
Hmm.
But she's a certified deaf interpreter, and she started an organization called EDAG, IDAG, the International Deaf Advocacy Group. And so she's looking at doing something, doing what she can to bring forward the plight of the deaf and hearing impaired throughout the world, especially in the third world.
Okay.
So I think she'd make a good guess for you.
Okay, Jerry. Thank you. Thanks very much for your call.
Oh, can I give her phone number to your producer?
Do you have access to a computer? Can you email that to us? It's easier because Rhonda's answering all the other phone calls.
Okay, sure. Just
I'll give you her. Here's her email directly. It's Fanning, F-A-N-N-I-N-G, at WPR.org. Just shoot her an email with the phone number. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Jerry. Thank you very much for the call. Donna in Green Bay. Hi, Donna.
Hi. I heard last week that we should start getting prepared to be inundated with all of these PACs and super PAC political announcements. And so many of them are supposedly business related, but the thing that has been going through my mind, and I don't have a speaker, I'm not sure people have started to pay attention to it, but how much does this cut down from our local economy when our local businesses cannot advertise during the whole, you know, expanse of all of these political discussions? And I heard, like, in Wisconsin, it's going to be tremendous because we're talking the recalls, we're talking the primary for senator, we're talking the presidential.
Right.
And I heard an announcement on one of the local TVs where a small businessman says, my business increased by 50% after I advertised on TV. Now, if they can't get radio or TV ads because it's outpriced and very few are available, what effect does that have on mm-hmm. our local economy?
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that before. Money's pouring in.
Yes.
Money's going to pour in. Oh, my gosh, the money. We haven't seen nothing yet, huh?
And so many of these people are supposedly business-oriented. They're mm-hmm. trying to promote business. And I guess I'm saying, isn't this counterproductive?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's an interesting point. All right. Thank you, Donna.
Okay.
Thank you for advising us. Diane in Milwaukee. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. I would like to know why... I don't know if you can get the guy who wrote What's the Matter with Kansas, but there must be another political scientist who knows why poor people vote Republican. They talk about how Christian they are, evangelical Christian, and then when they get into office, they cut everything for poor people. And I can't understand why we keep supporting them. I just don't understand it, why people vote against their own best interests.
Well, there are some who are saying that both the Republicans and the Democrats are in the pocket of Wall Street.
Well, when you look at what their programs are, you just look what happened with the House of Representatives. Anything that cut anything for the lower class, the working class, was a no-no. But anything that was giving tax cuts to the rich was a yes-yes.
Okay, Diane, it might be an interesting show to talk about what the parties stand for right now. We could have a great conversation about that. Do they adhere to certain philosophies? Do they follow through on those philosophies? Or are they so worried about reelection and that lobbyists influence them way too much, no matter what their political perspective? You're talking me into this. So, we could do a show on this. Thank you, Diane. Bye. Andy in Mercer. Hi, Andy.
Good morning. As a follow-up to your previous caller, I'd like to suggest a book by an author, Lawrence Lessig. He's a Harvard law professor, and he's wrote a book called Republic Loss. And he's saying how all the money comes into the top of Congress from the top 0.5% and not from the people, which is against our Constitution. And a Gallup poll just found that 64% of Americans rate the honesty and ethical standards of members of Congress as low or very low. Their worst rating in record. In fact, they're now to below telemarketers.
Oh, my. Isn't that something? What's it? It's Republic Loss?
Yeah.
Okay.
Excellent book. I saw an interview from him on TV, and I saw another interview on online.
Okay.
He's an excellent speaker, and he wants to get the people donating money and not the big business.
Well, that's interesting. Good.
Turn it over.
All right. We could have a good conversation there.
He is excellent.
Thank you, Andy.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Mark in Richland Center. Hi.
Good morning. I wanted to second the earlier caller's request for Dennis Kucinich, and I wanted to emphasize the fact that Dennis's monetary policy is similar in that he, along with Ron Paul, want to eliminate the Fed. The differences in their policies might be something to talk about as well. And by bringing in somebody like Stephen Zarlenga, who helped Dennis write his monetary bill, which is H.R. 990 this time around, his NEED Act for full employment, they changed the monetary policy of the U.S. You mentioned just a minute ago about people thinking that Wall Street is controlling everything, and in fact, they are, because banks issue our currency instead of our Department of Treasury. So Stephen Zarlenga at the American Monetary Institute, or Ellen Brown at webofdebt.com, or the people that did The Money Fix, that's a movie that you can find online, Dennis Kucinich, a lot of people are involved in monetary reform. And a lot of what we define as money would change the way we behave as people. So I think that simply talking about economics versus what we're using for money is a wrong-headed approach, whereas Kucinich and Zarlenga and Ellen Brown and others, Ellen Brown mentions that the state of North Dakota doesn't have economic problems, but they have a different monetary system, basically. So I would recommend those people that we take a look at this, and it would directly address the business of why Wall Street has the power that it does, because, in fact, they have the power to issue currency. That's really not constitutional, and even Ron Paul is against that methodology of putting currency into the economic equation.
All right, Mark, thank you. Thanks very much for your call. We're doing an open line. It's early in January, early in a brand new year, and we're getting your suggestions. It's been a very productive open line, too. If you listen to us, you know we follow through on many of your suggestions, and we've had many suggestions that captivate us, and we'll follow through on these. I'm still looking for that historical nonfiction book, Current. Somebody, please. Got to start reading something like that and do a show on it. Here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Hour two, a senior editor for National Geographic who did the cover story this month on twins, alike but not alike. You should see the pictures of these twins. They're just knockouts, particularly the truck drivers. Drive together on the truck. And it looks at the studies that have been going on for some time now that look at hereditary similarities, identical hereditary genetic structure, and environmental influences. And obviously, twins have been studied in that regard. And there's also a new component, which the editor will tell us about. It would be fun to hear from twins the second hour of the show, too. So that's coming up. Hour two, more phone calls for this open line in a moment. 800-486-8655. If you can't get through, we recommend that you go to WPR.org, and then you find your way to the Kathleen Dunn Show. Click on Listener Suggestion. There's a form you fill out that says program comments and suggestions, and then Rhonda and Chrissy and I will all get those and can mull them over. Okay. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next caller is Robert in Stevens Point. Hi, Robert.
Hello. Yeah, see what you were asking about books with nonfiction books dealing with historical matters?
Yes.
Yes, I'm not sure if you've heard of the author Colin Woodard wrote the book with till it was the last couple of months called American Nations,
okay.
A History of the 11 Regional Cultures of North America.
Mm.
And it goes on to describe how examine the numerous religious and ethnic settlement patterns that made up the nation and over the last few hundred years, and it goes on to explain how their behaviors and their beliefs continue to influence us today, and why it would explain why certain parts of the country are at each other's throats on different ideological matters.
Okay.
Such as just to name a few. I'm not going to run off all 11, but Yankeedom, which is the ideological descendant of New England Puritanism, starting out as a utopian theocratic experiment to reform humanity, but eventually it evolved into non-puritanical reform movements like abolitionism, prohibition, ecological movement, etc. The Deep South, having been founded by very class-centered, hierarchical, slave-owning English settlements from the West Indies, known for it to be violently authoritarian, and that continued to, that those attitudes continued to influence their attitude, their reactions to abolitionism, the Reconstruction, labor unions.
Mm-hmm.
There's the New France, which is basically Southeast Canada and former French Louisiana, whose legal codes are still governed to some degree by the Code Napoleon, and Far West, the Western states, settlement overseen by corporations, railroad companies, who misled settlers about harsh conditions or chances for prosperity, which led to lingering hostility to this day.
All right, Robert.
Corporatism and a federal government. I could go on and list.
Right, right. You've piqued our interest. It sounds very interesting.
That's by Colin Woodard, Woodard.
Wonderful. Great suggestion. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
All right, we'll follow through on that. Tom in Mequon, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I have a bold suggestion, and that is I'm looking for a show that you talk about the Koch brothers and who they are, how they've gotten their money, what their policies are, and the groups that they're funneling money to, especially in the northern states, and the effect that their meetings with the governors and our senators and other people from other states have had. And I think the guest to have on, if NPR wouldn't be too afraid, it'd be the guy who actually called our governor early last year. And if I could say also, I sure would like to see like a monthly feature that talks about the labor movement in this country, in this state, what it's done to change things from 100 years ago to make this into a middle-class, prosperous community, and how, you know, for millions of people, by allowing them to make a reasonable wage, it's improved the lives of everybody.
Okay, Tom, thank you. Thank
Certainly.
You. It might be interesting to do a show on influence on the political system from people like the Koch brothers and from other organizations, more liberal organizations, people who are behind the scenes trying to influence policy, wouldn't it? That would be a good show. Thank you, Tom, for your call. Dina in Minneapolis. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
All right, Dina, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
I have a little bit of a different take on the historical novel for you. I don't know if you've ever read any books by Sarah Vowell.
No.
She's been on This American Life quite a bit, and she's written at least three books on her. Well, one of my favorite books is called Assassination Vacation, and she visits historical sites where political assassinations have taken place.
Oh.
And she's very witty and funny, and has a very different take on history. She's very smart. She has the same sort of voice, maybe, as David Sedaris, and she's written, one book is called Assassination Vacation. There's another one called The Wordy Shipmates, which is all about when the settlers came to Plymouth.
Hmm.
They're really great, and they're not quite as super serious as other historical novels. They're mm-hmm. really accessible for everyone, and I really like them a lot.
Please,
so you might want to consider that.
Please give me her last name again.
Vowell. It's Vowell.
Okay. Well, that sounds good.
She's on National Public Radio a lot. So.
Okay. Well, I think that's a splendid suggestion, Dina.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Who is that guy, Rhonda, who is traveling all over the United States finding interesting markers and places? Remember we had him on a couple years ago? He was going to out-of-the-way places, visiting all 50 states. That would be... she's on the phone. She'll look it up. Thank you. Remember that? Somebody will remember that. I wonder, he must still be traveling. He was really interesting. Just reminded me when Dina suggested Sarah. All right. Karen in Hillsboro. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Feel a little nervous about making this suggestion, but I'm going to just kind of throw it out there.
okay.
I know very personally of a young man who grew up in Madison. His he was in a single parent home and grew up on AFDC and very, very limited circumstances. And after graduating high school, he went into the Marines and served 8 years in the Marines, and then including a tour of Iraq. And then he got out and went and got his undergrad degree at University of California, San Diego. and then went on to get his, I think he got his graduate degree from Stanford. I think it was in urban development, but I'm not certain. And now he is getting his PhD in engineering from MIT. And I just thought that he would give a very interesting perspective, given that he's from Madison, and he, like I said, he grew up very, very low income, and he's been kind of, he was outstanding in the Marines, and he's been outstanding ever since. So, just this guy's name, well, I don't know if that sounds like somebody people would be interested in hearing from.
You know, it might be. Well, we'd have to frame it. How to become an outstanding person is not a bad idea for a talk show, but we probably have to frame it some way. How to overcome obstacles, how to... I'm always interested in that, what makes some people succeed and really work very hard, even though their lives may be extremely tough. I'm always interested in that, the answer to that, so he could provide an answer to that, right?
Yeah, well... when he was at San Diego, he started volunteering at a San Diego high school. He took on a class that it was the third week of classes, and they'd gone through four teachers already. And he volunteered to teach this class for 2 years. And now that he's in Boston, I guess he's doing the same thing with a low-income area high school.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's just going in and volunteering to
do this. There's the angle. There's the angle that we would take with him. If you want to, I don't know if you want to say his name on the radio, but if you want to send us more information, Karen, we'll meet him.
Okay, where do I send it to?
Well, we've got this thing. Did you? Can you do the email thing?
No, you can't.
Well then, you need to send me a letter.
Okay.
Can you do that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, it's Kathleen Dunn, Wisconsin Public Radio, 310 West Wisconsin Avenue, Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
Rhonda, what's our zip? Rhonda's answering phones. I'm bugging her. 53203? 53203 is the zip.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, Karen.
Good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Oh, and she looked up. Here is Where Project, Andrew Carroll. Okay. He has a book about really the experience of traveling all over the country, and it's coming out later this year. All right, so we'll book him later this year. Just popped to mind. Great. All right, let's go next to Randy in Key Wascom. Hello, Randy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'd suggest you try to get a hold of a guy by the name of J. Christian Adams. He's a former prosecutor in the Justice Department that resigned in disgust after Eric Holder took over and wrote a book on how political the Justice Department has become under Holder.
Yeah, somebody just called with a suggestion. Hugh called earlier with the same suggestion, so...
Okay, I've been off and on, so I didn't listen to all of it.
All right, yeah, we'll look that up for you. We may do that. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Still looking for that historical, real, you know, presidential history. If it isn't coming to mind now, keep our email address in mind so that we can work on something that's historical current. I mean, not current history, current book about history. Jeff in Winneconne.
Hi. You know, 10 years ago, I was ordered by the banks to refinance my home. It was a FHA home. The person that you want to get a hold of for this is a person named Henry Tolliver. He told me, stay on that loan for 30 years, because if they do refinance you, you have to pay $15,000 in recapture. A lot of people don't realize that the banks are going to try to refinance those FHA loans, and they're going to have to pay the $15,000 recapture.
Okay.
Yes. And Henry Tolliver is the person. He's the one that used to run the FHA. He's not running it anymore.
Okay. And do you know where he might be?
It's hard to say. Milwaukee was the last place I knew.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye. Bob in Sparta. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. The last 40 years are pretty well covered prior to the housing bubble blow up. It's Reckless Endangerment by Gretchen Morgenson, who is a columnist in the New York Times.
Okay.
And another one is The Imperial Presidency about Theodore Roosevelt, written by James Bradley.
Yes, okay.
Who's the son of one of the people that was raising the flag on Iwo Jima.
Yes.
And there's a...
And that's all we have time for. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
For the call, Bob. And if you didn't get through or couldn't call us today, go to WPR.org. The Kathleen Dunn Show is there. And then you go to listener suggestion, and there's a form that you fill out, program comments and suggestions, and it will be sent our way. Thank you, everybody. I thought it was a very productive open line. Lots of very good suggestions. It's a good way to start the new year with lots of good suggestions for shows. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for answering the many phone calls, and thanks for the calls. Stay with us. Twins coming up.